covering the crew all season long on WTMJ. This is Brewers Extra Innings. Now, here's your host, Dominic Catronio.
Oh, man. I mean, I can really be proud of being an optimist and being the sort of guy that can find silver linings and find positivity. And I will find a few things. Okay, a couple of things. A thing I like this game tonight. I'll work on it. I'm going to keep looking. 3-0 to stay up late for that one. That one's sunk. Hey, I'm joking. I'm being sarcastic, all right? So the Brewers fall today. 3-0 to the Giants in the game. They weren't even sleepwalking. It was just like the full-on anesthesia. It just was not a well-played game offensively. Three double plays, no extra base hits. You could see that coming after hitting 11 extra base hits yesterday against Colorado. Tyler Mahle shoved, first time the Brewers had seen him in 4 years. Brandon Sproat is an enigma. We'll talk about him in the next segment. But with Jerry Augustine, I'm Dominic Catronio. I mean, the thing that jumps out to me, Augie, it's just the offense. And it's just the fact that this team is both ways. We've seen it both in the whole month of July, where they look great, and then they're the weeks, second time in the second half, that they've been shut out. And it's just feels like when it goes, it really is going lately.
Yeah, you know, I agree with you. I think there's times when you face guys that go and they just command the strike zone really well tonight. I thought Mahle did a really nice job using it all speed, using that split finger very effectively. You know, he got 8 ground balls for outs. Then you add three of those are double plays. That's 11 outs by ground balls. So he definitely kept the Brewers off stride. Brewers could get a guy on base. They were able to initiate and get the double play. But I think that's the story of the ballgame, is Mahle just being able to control the Brewers' offense and by keeping the ball in and out, getting heavy hitters, and keeping the ball on the ground. And I think that was the story of the ballgame.
Yeah, today for Mahle, he got 18 outs in today's game, of course. 6 of them coming on 3 swings with the double play ball. But when you divvy up the ground outs and the fly outs, he had 8 ground outs to produce 11 outs and only 4 fly ball outs. And that's kind of an interesting formula when you think about the ballpark that he's pitching in San Francisco. And I've seen some planning and freaking out about the fact like, oh, he came in with a 5, which I know is true. But when you look under the hood, Tyler Mahle has the biggest split in ERA between home games and road games. In fact, his ERA is a full almost 5.5 runs better at home than it is on the road. He's now 3-3 at home with a 2.65. He's 0-6 on the road with an 8.05. So he's going to rob somebody blind here at the trade deadline. I'm sure these teams are paying attention to this, of course, but it's a trick that really works in San Francisco, being such a pitcher-friendly ballpark. And I can agree with you, Augie, that yes, he mixed things up and kept things on the ground. I just think that the Brewers, they missed some opportunities in this game, especially with Garrett grounding into the double play to end the second inning, getting a leadoff walk in the 6th, and then Ortiz grounding into a double play, getting a leadoff single from Churio and not getting him get past second base. It just wasn't a sustained normal offense we've seen from the crew. And I'm going to have a rant later on in the show here, but it's just like, this is the offense that it's going to be. I'll explain why later, but it's just when you don't see them play like themselves, and it's happened a little more frequently than we're used to the last 2.5-3 weeks or so, it just makes you go, offense we saw in the NLCS, I don't want to see it popping up again here in July.
Yeah, you just don't want, you know, I think the big thing, Dom, you know, with the ball club, and, you know, we talk about how you get into the end of July and into August, those are the toughest times to play the game of baseball, especially on the major league level. And you're going to have some a little bit different in the ups and downs. And I think we've seen evidence of it now, even since they started the second half after the All-Star break. Just some offensive. You see, prototypically, they've been really swinging the bat well. The homestand, you're 7-2, swinging the bat pretty well. But at the same time, this ball club, you get out and pitchers are making good pitches. And I think the way pitchers are making good pitches, they're not making good pitches so much with the fastball. They're locating their fastballs, but they're really making good pitches with their secondary pitches, keeping the hitters off stride. And we saw that with Malley tonight. He got a lot of also secondary pitches, and he was able to keep the ball down, keep the hitters off stride, staying in and out, really using the strike zone effectively, expanding the strike zone. I think you're going to get those games, and those are the tough games for us as fans to say, you know what, where is that offense? What could have done different? Yeah, the double play balls were really this story of the game. Malley pitched through very well. He got the eight runs, but the three double play balls were really the difference in the ball game.
And three hits. I mean, that's the other thing too. And Malley's not a guy that walks a lot of guys too. He only had two walks. The Brewers only drew two walks today, both of them against Malley. And three hits. I mean, that's they used them all up yesterday, I guess, against Colorado. Shake it off. I'm not going to overreact about one loss. Again, I've said it before. I'll say it again. You're on a 100-win pace. You're going to lose 62 of them. Okay. And who knows? Maybe they'll make us eat our words with winning the next two games in this series. San Francisco's been a bit of a house of horse for them the last few seasons, especially since I've been covering the team. Try to shake it off and move on. I'll have some more offense thoughts later on, but part of the story today is Brandon Sproat, and we got to talk about Sproat and try to make sense of this weird stat line, because the optimist will tell you, the glass half full will tell you, hey, it was a quality start, but the people who watch that game will tell you it was quality in name only. We'll talk about that coming up on the other side of the break on 620 WTMJ. Brewers fall 3-0. Just a weird game because Brandon Sproat started, and I can show you all the under the hood numbers to say this wasn't a good day. I could show you the stat line. It says it was a decent day. It didn't matter if Brandon Sproat went 9 innings and 1 run allowed today, Augie. The Brewers offense is the reason they lost this game, and I think Sproat's getting unfairly labeled as the scapegoat in today's game. I think every single person would have taken this start today from Sproat, given the last few outings from Sproat. And I also want to defend Brandon here for a second. I also want to defend the fact that this is your fifth, arguably your sixth starter. This is the bottom of your active depth chart right now. And you could argue with a healthy Brandon Woodruff and Quinn Priester, he's not on this team right now. He's in AAA. So it's a reminder that this is depth that is being tested. And he's a rookie, right? It doesn't snap your fingers and work overnight. I'm going to defend Brandon Sproat here at the beginning before I criticize him here. You know, it's kind of a compliment sandwich, if you will. But, Augie, I see pieces. And today there were few and far between. But there are things that I see, and I know Chris Hook sees, and I know the Brewers see. The reason why fans, I think, are frustrated with Brandon Sproat is that they expect, and they were, you know, sort of sold a bill of goods saying, well, you know, Freddie Peralta, we figured him out, and he was great. And, I mean, can we remind ourselves about Freddy Peralta the first 3 years as a big leaguer? I think we all need to sit down and look at Baseball Reference for a second here and remind everybody, success is not linear. Of course, we all remember the debut where he had 13 punch. He still had an ERA north of 4.5 in his first 3 years in the show. Okay, this doesn't happen overnight. He is your last of the depth chart starter right now, getting experience in the big leagues. I'm cutting him a little bit of slack, at the same time having the standard stay high, because that's what the Brewers standard is.
I agree with you. I you know, there's a standard that you want, but when I think when you talk about a Brandon Sproat, he is a work in progress, and you can see it tonight. You saw it in the game tonight, almost after every inning. Chris Hook was there when they were going over things, and even got to the point that one time we even saw Murph over talk him, trying to get him into that those abilities to go out and be consistent with his execution. I think out of three walks he had tonight, I think two were on four pitches. Just, and when you think about those walks, those pitches weren't even close. And you're talking about there, you're talking about having a good sequence. Number two, executing the sequence. And he has times he goes through those sequences of hitters where he doesn't locate very well. And then he tries to overlocate and he makes a mistake and the guy hits a home run. And those things happen when you're young, you're trying to build something, you're trying to figure out how to be consistent. I think when you look at Sproat's stuff, we all understand he's got great stuff. He's got top of the line stuff that you want out of your pitcher. But to find that consistency with execution and sequences is so important. And I think that's one thing we don't see out of him is those sequences where you go in there, it looks like it's just you're hard at work, seeing what you have to do and locating the ball. I thought Contreras was working hard with him, trying to get him into a good sequence. And that time he, you know, you see it for a couple good hitters, but then he falls out of it. And when he falls out of it, he makes mistakes.
And some of the stuff under the hood that I want to talk about here, right? He had 7 3-ball counts today, Augie, 7 of them, and 5 of them resulted in base runners, right? That's not battling back. That's basically being a defeated mental of not being able to get back into at-bats. Furthermore, under the hood, I pointed this out before when he gave up the home run to Grant McRae, a 2-run shot in the 4th inning, a guy who hasn't hit a home run since the 2024 season, hadn't had a hit in the season. He's been up and down a little bit this year for San Francisco, is the fact that today, Brandon Sproat did not throw a single one of his secondary pitches, his sweeper, his changeup, or his curveball, for a strike, as in the zone. Now, he got a couple of gift called strikes on big strike calls, but I'm saying in the StatCast zone, not a single one of his secondary pitches ended up in the strike zone. And some folks may be thinking, well, don't you want to get chase on those pitches? Sure, but you also have to introduce that you can get a strike called on those pitches. You have to introduce that you know how to locate said pitch. He wasn't getting chase. Furthermore, he wasn't getting chase swing and miss either. He still got 65% first pitch strikes. He still got a total of 12 swings and misses, but a ton of them were on fastballs. 8 of the 12 were on fastballs or sinkers, and none of them are on, or one more on the cutter. So what I'm looking at here, Augie, is I'm seeing a guy that, you know, his best pitch is arguably his sweeper, and he could not come going through it 8 times today.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, it just seems like when you're a pitcher and you got your fastball, which you talk about the locating and fastball, he's got a great fastball. He could throw it to good spots, and you know that's predominantly what he pitches with. But when you pitch, you have to demonstrate to your opponent that you can throw your secondary pitches for strikes. And that's the way the game starts. When you're out there, they're up there watching you, and they all keep logs. They all understand going into the game, hey, guy's got good fastball, has a problem with his breaking ball, his secondary pitches, throwing those for strikes. And they're gonna be a little bit more patient. And now all of a sudden you look up, and he's got a lot of 3-ball counts. And he does get the 3-ball counts because he's trying to be too fine with those secondary pitches. You have to get the ability to throw those secondary pitches for strikes, where then you can expand the strike zone. Then you're going to get the swings and misses on the balls out of strike zone. You're going to get some activity with those pitches. He doesn't get enough activity with just secondary pitches, locating him first in the strike zone, and then being able to expand the strike zone. I think those are things that they're working hard with him, having the confidence to throw in those pitches for strikes early in the game to demonstrate to the opponent that, hey, I can throw those for strikes, I can expand the strike zone as the game goes on. Yes, he gave him a quality start today, and he got to give him credit for the quality start. He kept the team in the ball game, but at the same time, you said a couple of times, 3-ball counts, not having great sequences, coming back and trying to make too many good pitches. All of a sudden, you make a pitch to a guy who hasn't been swinging the bat very well. You put it in the zone, he hits the ball in the ballpark, and you lose the ball game.
And then in the middle of this game, we saw Pat Murphy go over to Sproat, kind of put hands on shoulders after the 2-run 4th inning and just sort of try to give him a pep talk. And now, unfortunately, we won't hear from Murph today because for some reason we did not see the telecast show Pat Murphy today. But I'm really intrigued to hear from Murph of what he told Brandon in that moment, because to that point, he had got his first pickoff in the game, but there were 3 stolen bases against him because he was losing track of runners. He picked off 2 runners today. We've talked about this over and over, Sproat, where the mind hasn't caught up to the game. And I think sometimes the speed of the game exposes him. I need you to elaborate on this, Augie, because I haven't been in fair territory in a game, right? The speed of the game as a rookie is the fastest it feels in your life.
It does. And, you know, it comes out there trying to do too much. I think you have to come out and you have to have a game plan. And I think sometimes you change that game plan around. It might be a time where we see Chris Hook and now tonight we even saw Murph talking with him and Jim Henderson talking with him, that I think they're going to start coming up with a game plan to say you stay within your game plan. You don't alter it no matter what happens. You don't alter it. You got to find something where you can feel consistent, where you can throw, go in the game and be consistent with it, because the game is faster and you got to be located. And all of a sudden you mislocate. Now you got yourself in trouble. And you look at him at what he does, and when he struggles, he mislocates the ball and he goes deep in the counts. And then you go deep in the count, you have to make a good pitch. Your mind works when you're on the mound, trying to go figure out what can I do to execute. And then you get away from being a pitcher, Dom, and you start being a thrower. And that's where I think when you talk about Sprout, where he is, he's right in between there. He's trying to find it. He can be a good pitcher because he's got great quality stuff, but yet he comes out and he gets himself in trouble. He becomes a thrower, and that's where you make mistakes.
I'm sitting here. The other thing I'm concerned about is the velo. It continually dips throughout the game. And we're coming off of a day where we're marveling at Jacob Mizorowski sitting virtually 103 miles an hour. You know, I'm going to look to Brandon Sproat this offseason and say, hey, man, you got to get on the Miz program because, you know, you're throwing out of the stretch only now. You need to be able to maintain this velocity. You need to be able to prove what you're capable of at the big league level, because look at what he did that first time through the order. Allowed an E9 on a sun ball that Bowers had a tough time with, a bloop single, a walk. Now, he did allow a double play that was a screamer, 111 off the bat, and then a soft single down the right field line that was well placed at the bottom of the order by Rodriguez. And that was like 70% ball usage when he was sitting 98 miles an hour. And I'm telling Brandon Sproat this offseason, hey, man, I know you think you're in shape, but you're not in pitcher shape. There's a difference right now, because if he's ending his day at 92, 93 miles an hour when he's starting his day at 98, to me, that's a little bit of a red flag.
And that's confidence. And I think it's confidence of being in the game and having find that good game flow, or what you call pace and rhythm. You just get in a game where everything is working well for you, and all of a sudden you get to the later on, you get into that fourth and fifth and sixth inning, boy, you feel like you can reach back and get more. And that's where you're seeing a Miz who's so consistent in throwing his strikes. His delivery is consistent. He has a great game plan. He has great focus. He has great sequences, and he executes. And I think when you're thinking of seeing with Brandon Sproat, he's still learning that. And that's that combination of where you said that the game gets too fast for you, and all of a sudden your mind works and you get away from it. And then it's about locating a pitch. Boy, I got to spot the ball. I've got to stay back, and I got to make sure I make a good pitch. All of a sudden, your velocity starts coming down because you're not free and easy and throwing your spots. You're not confident in what you're doing. But he's got such good stuff. I think it's a matter of time. I think it's a matter of game planning, and hopefully he can work himself through it, because he could really be a valuable part of this ball club.
And for the folks in the live chat asking, well, put him in the pen, put him in the pen. The walks concern me. The three ball counts, the sequencing, like we're talking about. You can get away with that as a starting pitcher. You can't get away with that in the bullpen, which is where the Brewers kind of have to decide what they want out of him. I think he has enough weapons to be a starter as long as possible. The bullpen is kind of seen as a last resort in the eyes of the player development staff. Who's hot, who's cold? It's brought to you by Cider Heating, Plumbing, and Electrical. You know, Sproat is kind of a mix of the two of them right now. Let's call it lukewarm for Brandon Sproat. After a day at the lake, the golf course, or the ballpark, come home to comfort with Cider Heating, Plumbing, and Electrical. And keep your AC running at its best with a mid-summer checkup. Visit Cider.com, Cider.com, to schedule service today and stay cool all summer long. 855-616-1620 if you're staying up late with us tonight. 855-616-1620. Let's talk more offense, because that's what I think everybody wants to talk about. I've got a rant. I've got a sports talk radio rant. That's an alert. If you're listening on the podcast, you missed it late night. For every you staying up late with us, you're going to get a rare sports talk moment from Dom on the other side of the break on 620 BTMJ. So I want to talk a little bit about the offense. And I know a lot of people on the text line do as well. 855-616-1620 and in the YouTube live chat. 855-616-1620. With Jerry Augustine, I'm Dominic Catronio. Now, with the trade deadline a week away, that dominates the headlines, of course. And if you've been listening to me all season long, you've been listening to me the last month specifically, I've been warning you, there's not anything available on the offensive side of the ball for the Brewers. And let me explain. I am going off the big board from The Athletic, from their top 75 players likely to be dealt, or at least on the board for all of these teams to be dealt. And I'm only going to point out position players, okay? And could they or won't they be a fit? I'm going from top down because we're going to start out with some names that you think are pretty sexy, but I'm going to explain why they're not getting traded or why they're not getting traded to the Brewers. And at the bottom, you're going to realize, like, yeah, I don't think that's better than what we currently got. So let me go through this, Augie. C.J. Abrams is a top position player ranked by The Athletic. He's not getting traded. He should not be getting traded. He's going to call for a Lions ransom. I mean, the Nats are a year away from competing in my eyes, and C.J. Abrams is a part of that. Wilson Contreras, they're in a playoff spot. He's not getting traded. Then you go down. Seiya Suzuki, he's not getting traded. Isak Paredes, Astros are hunting a playoff spot. He's not getting traded. Dalton Varsho, probably not a fit for the Brewers. Doesn't hit for enough power. He's an outfielder. Brewers have a glut of outfielders right now. I'm still going down. Ryan Jeffers is the first, maybe, but even yet, it's a catcher. William Contreras, we'll talk about him in a moment. Are you going to be able to split time between those two? We shall see, because both of those guys are everyday players. Luis Arraez, not a fit on this team. They have an all-star second baseman. They have a guy hogging up DH right now. Taylor Ward, we've talked about him before. Not a lot of power this season, and yet another outfielder. Jaren Duran, not a great year. Lars Nootbaar, not a great year. You get what I'm saying here. We're getting lower here. Matt Chapman, currently hurt. George Springer, again, already have a DH filling up a spot. Francisco Alvarez, not that good. Matt Shaw, in division. Gleyber Torres, not that good. Christian Walker, not getting traded. Eugenio Suarez, not that good. Like, I'm down here where it's like, yeah, I'm done. None of these names make any more sense from here. It's not going to happen. There are no bats that you expect available, because I didn't even mention Byron Buxton, Augie, and he has made it very clear. He's got a no-trade clause. He is using it. He is staying in Minnesota. This is the offense that needs to figure it out.
It is. It is. And I think that's one thing. You're going to see Murph juggling the lineup. You're seeing, you know, we're seeing a lot more of Vaughn in the lineup, and we're seeing trying to get things working out. When you look at what Mitchell has done, he's been swinging the bat so well. And, you know, guys are going to have their ups and downs. Bowers was struggling for a while. He's starting to come back. You like the way Lourdes was swinging the bat. And it's just Pratt swinging the bat very well. Ortiz has been swinging the bat very well. So, you know, it's just a matter of finding that lineup or that group of guys that you want to put in certain spots that you know can go day in and day out and score some runs for you. And it looks like when you look at this lineup, when you have Yelich, Churio, Terang, Contreras at the top of the order, along with Bowers and Vaughn after that, and Mitchell, that's a pretty good start to a lineup. It's just a matter of, can they go out and execute, and can they go out and do the things they have to do? Yeah, we've seen a couple games where they haven't swung the bat. Tonight's one of them. But it's really interesting to see that. Maybe you're going to see Murph a little bit, juggle that lineup a little bit, see if he can be creative and come up with a formula that really goes out and swings the bat on a consistent basis.
You know, I think the other thing, it's time to get creative, where we've talked about it with Christian Yelich at the top of this order. We haven't really talked about William Contreras in the middle of this order. I mean, this has kind of been the go-to 1-4 in some capacity, with Yelly leading off, Churio second, who's also cold, Terang hitting third, and then Contreras hitting fourth. I mean, I'm ready to shake things up. I mean, I want to see a different lineup tomorrow, whether it's Terang leading off or Mitchell leading off. I mean, just try something, because clearly something's off. Yelly hasn't been himself all year. It's getting to a point where you can't ignore it. And I know he had a couple of good games against a bad team in the Mets. I'm getting to the point where you need to figure out what you have. And even tonight was a night that I'm like, man, I really would have thought, you know, there would have been an opportunity for Yelly to drop down a bunt and kind of surprise the defense on the other side, you know, especially when they were down 3-0, for instance, with after the double play ball, just trying to keep the rally going in the sixth inning, or even in the ninth inning, he ended up striking out looking. You know, there was just no creativity from the offense today, despite not having anything going in their direction. I think you're at the point where you do need to mix things up. I just think that, I mean, we saw Lara pinch hit for Bowers, tell somebody that sentence in May, that was going to happen later this year. I think we're at a point now where, what's the worst that could happen? You go back to what you currently have. Let's see maybe somebody else in that leadoff spot moving forward.
I agree with you. I think that's one thing. I think you're going to see it. I think Murph has come to a time now when you got several games where you're not swinging the bat, although they, you know, you go 7-2 at home, that's pretty darn good. But you go on the road now, you lay a little bit of an egg the first day, and it's going to be interesting to see what this lineup does. And we talk so much, and we talk so much about how this next 4 or 5 weeks is so important for this ball club to ramp up and be ready when you hit September and be on a roll so you can go into the playoffs really playing well. So I think you're going to see Murph going to make some change-up. I think changes in the lineup. I think he's going to try a few different things and see what happens, or maybe just do it just to do it for a game or two, just to see how things happen, just change where these guys sit and see their approach and see what they do. But I think that's one thing I agree with you, Dom. I think it's you go to time for when you have a certain lineup and it goes in a certain way, you know, sometimes it gets a little stagnant. And I think what you have to do then is you have to make some changes and just move some guys around. The guys are there. It's just where are you going to move them and where can you put them to where this team is playing at its best on the offensive side of the ball.
I mean, for Contreras, over his last 24 games, he only has 4 extra base hits over that time with 17 strikeouts. That's a 157 average and a 225 slug. That's not a cleanup hitter. And the last time I criticized William Contreras, he went off on a great week where he had like 3 homers in a 6-game span. So I hope the same happens here this week coming up in San Francisco. But like Terang can't be the only guy you're relying on for offense. I know he's been great, and a 265 average is misleading because it's a heavy 265 with an 820 OPS. That's a career high for him. He's got 15 homers. I just think that he needs help, man. And I think the sooner you try to play the hot hand and try to arrange this lineup the way that you can get creative with it. And it all really does start with Yelich. Somebody on the chat also mentioning Churio's been cold lately. I agree with that. At least he got a base hit tonight. I think the way that the Brewers, the only way is through, right? And they win this series and winning 9-0, we look like idiots here today, Augie. But the way I see it is, hey, what's the worst that can happen? You've got 2 months to go to figure this out.
Yeah, you got to get guys in. You got to give everybody a different look. I think that's what's so nice. And what's also nice about this time is it is hard. We talk about it, and I go on and on again about how the end of July and in August are tough. But when you get creative and you get guys in different spots, you're allowing these guys to do some different things and bat in different spots and maybe be asked to do different things. And I really like that. I think that's, if there's any time of the year where you really look, other than early in the season when you're trying to find your set lineup, is you go to this time of year where you can make some adjustments and try some different things and hopefully they work out. And, you know, even if you just try it for a few times, it gives guys just a different way they approach the game and who they hit behind and where they are and what they have to do. I think that's so important in a game of baseball.
Well, shake it off. It's already past midnight in the Central Time, so shake it off and get back at it tomorrow. It won't be me trying to see a win. It'll be you and Bob Brainerd, Jerry. So I appreciate you as always, my friend, and we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, we got Logan Henderson to come going on tomorrow. Last 6 starts, the Brewers have won all 6 games. Hey, good time tomorrow to make it number 7 and get this offense going a little bit.
Yep, exactly. Jerry Augustine joining us on 620 WTMJ. Thank you, Augie.
Good to be with you.
All right, so that was my buy or sell, talking about the trade deadline and how, look, the Brewers are not going to be buying a bat. There just isn't one available unless something absolutely crazy happens where Byron Buxton's willing to waive his no trade clause and leave with 2 years of team control remaining at $15 million a year. I mean, yeah, it'd be great, but the Twins feel like they could compete next year. So they're not going to give up Byron Buxton. And just like the Nats are not going to give up CJ Abrams. So the two quote unquote fits ain't going anywhere. So I just don't think it's going to happen. Sell is brought to you by Tony Windorf & Associates. If you're looking to buy or sell a home, trust Windorf & Associates, one of the top real estate teams in Wisconsin, and Keller Williams. They bring faith, family, and a red carpet experience to every home deal. Step up to the plate with a winning team behind you, windorfteam.kw.com. Let's go around the league, give you a checkup on what's going on around the league and standings and races here with exactly 2 months to go in the regular season on 620 WTMJ. To give a player of the game when you didn't score a run and nobody had an extra base hit. So let's give it to Garrett Stallings, who saved the bullpen with 2 innings of work, got a strikeout, had a walk, kept things tidy. technically kept the Brewers in it, losing 3-0 today to the Giants. And now you suddenly, you look at the rest of this week, right, these next two games against San Francisco. You have an off day on Thursday, and Trevor McGill threw, what, 8 pitches on Saturday night? Ashby threw 1 pitch on Sunday after throwing like a million pitches in the bullpen the previous 2 days. Abby Uribe hasn't pitched in the game in a little while, too. So you've got all three of the, you know, the main leverage arms available to you these next 2 days with the off day on Thursday as well. I mean, you can get aggressive with the bullpen with Logan Henderson going tomorrow, and hopefully that him being a fly ball pitcher in San Francisco, a pitcher-friendly ballpark, works in his favor. So, yeah, let's give it to Garrett Stallings. When else are we going to give it to Garrett Stallings? Congratulations, Garrett. It's brought to you by International Autos Group. Just like the game's MVP, you can drive it a summer in style and save up to $15,000 on select in-stock models. Visit IAMilwaukee.com, International Autos Group, where ordinary needs to be extraordinary. Cubs, they won today by a 7-3 final here in St. Louis, and that's where I am if you're watching on YouTube. Yep, I'm in a hotel room. Next 3 weeks, I'll be in a hotel room because I'm on the road with TBS. And tonight, I'm across getting ready to watch Cubs and Cardinals. So it's a 6-game lead as things stand right now in the division. And tomorrow they'll be sending Colin Ray to the mound against Michael McGreevy for the Cardinals, as the Cardinals are now back to reality. They are back to 500 and currently on the outside looking in the playoff race. If the playoffs started tomorrow, the Brewers would be the 2 seed. They still have a 4-game lead on the Braves for that 2 and 3 seed gap because the Braves got bludgeoned by the New York Mets today, 14-3. Then it's the Dodgers as the 1 seed. The Cubs would be hosting a best-of-3 series with the Philadelphia Phillies. Pittsburgh and Arizona are tied in record, so let's go ahead and take a look at who has the tiebreaker head-to-head, if they've even faced each other so far this season. Da-da-da-da-da. Arizona versus Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh has the advantage. Currently, they won 3 out of 4. They won a series earlier this year. There's one more head-to-head, so all Pittsburgh has to do is win one more game, and they will have the tiebreaker on Arizona, which could matter here down the stretch. So let's go ahead and give that last playoff spot to Pittsburgh. They will be playing a best-of-3 series in Atlanta against the Braves, and it would be that pair sending its way to Milwaukee for the NLDS. Whoever wins that series, Milwaukee will have home field advantage in the DS, and then, of course, depending on what happens in the other DS, where the Dodgers would be hosting the winner of the Cubs and the Phillies. 3-game series. So that's something to keep an eye on. The other teams on the outside looking in, again, the Nats are a game back. They're 54-53 here in the wild card race. They do not have a bullpen by any means, any stretch of the imagination. St. Louis, they've got some pieces they want to trade, like Riley O'Brien and maybe Andre Pallante. San Diego, I don't know what to make of them. I really don't. They're 500 again. They've won 3 in a row. They still have a negative run differential. Miami finally won tonight. They walked off on the Phillies and Yoan Duran. But they're suddenly under 500 and 2 games back of a playoff spot. And that's really where the contenders end. Because Cincinnati, as we know, not that good. San Francisco, bad. Mets, bad. Rockies, bad. So they've got 5 more days to figure out who are the contenders and who are the pretenders before the deadline. Back with more in a moment because let's talk a little bit. We got a little bit of news from Murph. We don't have a post-game press conference. We do have some news from Murph on the other side of the break here on 620 WTMJ. This is normally the part of the show where we air the Pat Murphy press conference presented by Old Fashioned Roofing. Win or lose, Murph gives it to you straight. Around here, so does Old Fashioned Roofing. Veteran-owned, Wisconsin-built, where a handshake still matters. Old Fashioned Roofing. Now, there was an error in the recording over on the television side, I guess, so we do not have Pat Murphy's post-game press conference, but we do have a bit of news courtesy of Todd Rosiak of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He is there on site, and this is his quote from his tweet. Pat Murphy made it clear he was not making excuses for what happened tonight, but he did mention the Brewers sat on the runway in Milwaukee for 5 hours Sunday night due to issues with their charter plane. That led to a very late arrival in San Francisco. Obviously not optimal. Now, if I wanted to put on my Instagram sleuth hat here for a second, judging by some sources that I'm familiar with here on this team and trying to see what's going on, well, judging by a a timestamp of this Instagram story of 19 hours ago of arrival to the ballpark. So I'm doing the math in my head. If it's 10:15 currently in the Pacific time zone, you know, that would be what, 22:15? So 19 hours back of that, 3:15. Ooh, that's a pretty late night to arrive and to setting up things for the team. I mean, it's part of the big leagues. You know, you can say, oh, you know, champagne problems, and you're not wrong. But that's a real thing. You know, it's a real thing that happens from time to time. And today, the Brewers could not galvanize it and use it as motivation to get the victory today as they fall 3-0 to the Giants. Well, sleep in tomorrow, get some rest, and then go to the ballpark, get some batting practice, and enjoy the cooler weather. You know, that'd be part of it, too. I should also mention that. That could be part of it, too, with the velo being a little bit down for Brandon Sproat. It's 63 degrees and windy. Remember, if you've never been to San Francisco in the summertime, it's really the fall. Right, you need a sweater. Marine layer rolls in. It's cold. It's windy. You think of Candlestick back in the day. That could be part of it. Making the adjustment, but make the adjustment. That's what big leaguers do. So they'll survive and they'll figure things out. No highlights from this one, but I do want to point out something that I tweeted earlier today. Just kind of having some fun with numbers. Back with more in a moment on 620 WTMJ. Like I said, we do this from time to time. Normally, we do the highlight recap here. Here are the two things that happened in this game. Back-to-back hits, a single, or I should say a double down the line, then a run scored on a RBI single from Luis Arraez. That made it 1-0 in the third inning. The Brewers had a runner in scoring position in the second, but bounced into a double play, and that would be their last. Or they have more at-bats with the runner in scoring position later in the game after a wild pitch, but they would not have an extra base hit in this game. Then from Grant McCray off of Brandon Sproat, a two-run homer in the fourth inning, made it 3-0, and then both teams just kind of coasted in. And that was it. That's all she wrote. Brewers fall in today's game 3-2-0. Here's something I tweeted earlier today. I'm just going to read the numbers, and I know this doesn't play that well on the radio, but I just want to point it out because I think there are some numbers to figure out, and I think the baseball world has anointed PCA as the runner-up to MVP if Shohei Ohtani is still MVP despite him not pitching as much the rest of the season. I still have a hard time not giving it to Shohei, but we'll see. I just put the numbers up blind of player A, player B, player C, and this goes back to August 1st of last year. Okay, so it's not just the season, which is why it's probably a different argument with PCA versus Bryce Turang and that sort of thing. Player A has the best batting average of this trio, but only by 5 points on player C. But player C has the best on-base percentage of this trio by 15 points. And player C has the best slugging, and player C has the best WRC plus by 14 points. And player C has as many home runs as the three of them, with 27. So player C is the best player, right? Well, in the eyes of wins above replacement, he's not. Player C is Bryce Turang since August 1st of last year. He's hitting .285 with a .374 on base and a .500 in 27 home runs and 35 doubles in that time. Player A is Bobby Witt Jr. with 7.6 wins above replacement. Remember, he's a shortstop, one of the best defensive shortstops in the game. And B is Pete Crow Armstrong, who, again, is a center fielder and maybe the best defensive center fielder in the game. And you got to remind yourself, the positional adjustment for shortstops and center fielders is much more advantageous to them. They don't get penalized for mistakes as often because their volume is much higher than second baseman. But yet Bryce Turang is considered one of the best defensive second basemen in the game, despite not having the WAR adjustment in his favor to calculate it the same as them. So Bobby Witt Jr. leads since August 1st of last year at 7.6 of Fangraphs WAR, F4. PCA is second at 7.0. And then it's Bryce Turang at third at 6.6. So he's a full win less than Bobby Witt Jr., but he plays in a different league. And he's only about 0.4 of a win less than Pete Crow Armstrong, despite Pete getting more of a defensive bump being a center fielder. This is a closer race than we're giving it credit for. And I hope Bryce has a great rest of the second half and we can really make this a fun argument, because Bryce is in the hunt for a Gold Glove once again. You know, the advanced numbers start to love him again. He leads all second baseman in defensive runs saved. He's in the top five in outs above average. I'm just starting my agenda early here, okay, for award season, because all the votes got to be in 2 months from tomorrow. Just putting it out there. I'm hoping. It'd be awesome. But, I mean, I think he's solidified as a top 10 MVP candidate. I think we can take that to the bank right now. Bryce Harper's the top 10 MVP candidate for this season. He's going to be a Gold Glove finalist at second base. And I also made my case on Brewers Weekly on Thursday. Joey Ortiz should get some love for the utility between third base and shortstop. I know he doesn't play the outfield, but Joey should get some love on that too. Make sense? All right, cool. Let's wrap up the program previewing tomorrow after this on 620 WTMJ. All right, check it out. I quoted it on the tweet. Pete Fairbanks is a friend of mine. We were in the minor league back in the Rangers organization. Remember, he blew a save a couple years ago with the Rays, and you know he was a man about it. He took the questions and everything. And I know Pete blew the save, of course, in the Sunday finale against the Marlins and stuff like that when William Contreras hit the walk-off homer against him. But the thing I'll always love about Pete is that he's honest and he's a pro, and anybody would love to have Pete Fairbanks. And the thing that he said to the media that has always stuck with me is like, you know, somebody asked a really stupid. It's kind of what happens when you have. You know, we're not all immune to stupid questions. A stupid question gets the best answer. And it was like, hey, you know what? What did you do? What did you think went wrong today? You know, classic, you know, eyewash question. He goes, oh, no, that just sucked. Everything just kind of sucked today. It was kind of an all-encompassing type of suck. And that's kind of how I feel about today's game. Just kind of an all-encompassing suck. And then he went on to say, you know, I'm looking at the clock. It's, you know, 14 minutes till 10 o'clock. I'll give myself 14 more minutes to sulk, and then we'll be on with it and figure it out tomorrow. I'll be back on the mound. And that's how I'm going to treat this, right? It's already past midnight here, Central Time, but I'm literally going to give it, I'm off the air here at the 29 mark. I'll give it one more minute, then I'm going to forget about this game for the rest of the season. You know, we said that about Friday's game, right, in the loss of the Rockies. Like, oh yeah, that's going to be the 100. If we ranked all 162 games of this season, Friday's loss would have been number 162. No, this one is the new number 162. Uneventful, pretty frustrating day. But once you're done listening to this podcast, drop it. All right? That's what I'm going to do. I'm not going to think about it again. Brewers aren't going to think about it again. Shake it off. Get on track. And I'll be doing the advanced scout on the Cubs here, trying to see if the Brewers can get one right back tomorrow. Logan Anderson. How about that? He gets the ball tomorrow. He's going up against Landon Roop, same time, same place, 8:48. What is 45, stupid first pitch time? It's the 38s are in Anaheim this weekend. Late night with the crew. It's got my brain all loony. Landon Roop, 7-8, 3.93 ERA this year, right-hander. Against Logan Henderson, 4-1, a 3.05 ERA for the Texan. This will be his ninth start of the season. 47 strikeouts to just 7 walks. In 38 innings of work, his whip is under 0.95. You know, here's another guy that's trying to audition for that, you know, quote unquote third spot in a postseason rotation. Looking forward to that. I won't be on the postgame show tomorrow. Again, it'll be Bob Brainerd since I am on assignment with TBS, and no postgame show on Wednesday as the finale of the series will be at 2:45. Shane Drouin against the opening day starter of the Giants, Logan Webb. Again, that's at 2:45 on Wednesday. Then an off day Thursday, and we're up late again for the weekend down in Anaheim with the Angels. Yeah, get your coffee ready. Do it for our show here tonight. Our producer's been Matt Yazel. I'm Dominic Catronio. Keep on swinging.